This is 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair. And on the first Friday of each month, we take occasion to discuss a topic of environmental pertinence to our state, our county, and to our hometown. Lisa Wozniak is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters and host of WEMU's first Friday Focus on the Environment. On this month's show, Lisa discusses the Great Lakes Compact and a recent decision on the part of the Great Lakes Governors and Premier of Ontario to allow an exemption to that compact.
My guest today is Mark Smith, Policy Director for the Great Lakes Regional Center of the National Wildlife Federation. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you, and good morning.
Waukesha, Wisconsin. It's become a common town that we know a lot about these days. It's recently been approved to receive an 8 million gallon of water per day diversion from Lake Michigan due to their own water being at risk of radium poisoning through their aquifers. This is a community that is the first one outside the Great Lakes Basin to receive a large-scale water diversion. So I want to start at the beginning. What exactly is the Great Lakes Compact? When was it adopted and why was it established?
Well, the Great Lakes Compact was negotiated by all the Great Lakes governors and Canadian premiers to attempt to get a handle on how do we manage Great Lakes water in the region and manage it in a way that prohibits diversions of water leaving the Great Lakes, but also managing our water in basin so that we can provide for our businesses to use it and use it in a sustainable way. So I would say in the about 15 years of negotiations in 2008, it finally was adopted by all the state legislators. The governors adopted it and Congress adopted it, and President Bush signed it in 2008.
So 8 million gallons a day. I mean, that's a lot of water. Is this, in your opinion, a dangerous precedent?
Well, you would think that any diversion of Great Lakes water would open up the floodgates, but the compact actually attempted to stop that. Prior to the compact, any governor in the Great Lakes could veto a diversion of water. In fact, Michigan has on its record of vetoing a diversion from Lowell, Indiana. But 8.2 million gallons a day really seems like a lot, but in essence, it's not amount of water that would cause any impact on lake levels or impact as a whole to the Great Lakes. So while it may seem large, it's really not as significant.
So let's talk about why. I mean, this is 8 million gallons of water going out of the basin. Why is that not a significant diversion?
Well, you think about the amount of water leaving the Great Lakes as compared with the Chicago diversion did, which everyone knows that's probably the most famous diversion of Great Lakes water that we have right now. That probably brought down lake levels by about 1.5 feet of water. This is not going to be a problem because this diversion actually has to return all its water. In fact, that's what the compact provided, is a set of standards for a community who is eligible to apply, has to be adjacent to the Great Lakes Basin, but also has to return all the water that it uses, less consumptive use. So this really will not impact the Great Lakes water levels because it will be returned.
89.1 WEMU's first Friday Focus on the Environment continues. I'm Lisa Wozniak, and we're talking about the Great Lakes Compact with Mark Smith, Policy Director for the Great Lakes Regional Center of the National Wildlife Federation. Now, Mark, you're saying that the water, this 8.2 million gallons, is going to be returned to the basin. As I understand it, the Waukesha Agreement requires the city to implement a recycling program for pharmaceuticals and personal care products for that water returned to the lake, and environmental monitoring and testing. Are those the components of the agreement that helped the National Wildlife Federation endorse this diversion?
Well, there's a whole host of things. And it's important to know for your listeners is that as submitted, this application failed to meet that standard. And the Great Lakes governors and Canadian premiers agreed with us on that. And so the governors and premiers had a choice. They could either approve this, they could veto it, or they can change it. And the governors and premiers decided that the latter was the best route, so they decided to change this application. And through those changes, they made this application in line with the standards. And, you know, we had argued for quite a long time that the application was providing water to towns that did not need it, overinflated amount of water. So a lot of the changes made this application in line with the compact standards.
So what does this say about the effectiveness of the Great Lakes Compact and what kind of precedent this sets for future potential wide-scale diversions from the Great Lakes Basin?
Yeah, and that was one of our concerns. We're always worried about what does this set for the next application down the road, and I think the governors took this seriously. They reviewed this. Michigan was an intellectual thought leader through this process. that they drove the debate on trying to get this application in line with the standards. And I think they took this seriously. And I think the process was bumpy. It was brand new. This has never been done before. So there's a lot of improvements that can be made. But what it does do is it shows that the compact process and the spirit and intent of the compact was upheld. And it really makes a difficult path moving forward for any application in the future to get approval for a diversion.
You're listening to 89.1 WEMU and our first Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm Lisa Wozniak, and we're talking with Policy Director for the Great Lakes Regional Center of the National Wildlife Federation, Mark Smith. So let's talk about the improvements that perhaps need to be made. Given that the Waukesha decision steps outside the provisions set forth, I think, in the Great Lakes Compact, is it time that the document itself be reviewed in a more comprehensive manner and that perhaps some changes need to be made to reflect the changing environmental landscape?
Well, I don't think the compact itself needs to be changed. Remember that this is a compact that had to be agreed to by every governor through its legislative body, and Congress and the president had to sign it. That was a massive uphill battle. So I would not want to encourage that to happen, because that's opening up a can of worms that potentially could weaken what we currently have. So what I think we can do is improve the public participation process in this, improve the efficiency of how this process played out for the governors to review this. There was inconsistencies. Some states decided to do a public hearing. Some states decided to do a review on their own. So I think a lot of those type of things can be changed, but the compact itself is strong. I think it does establish that the spirit and intent was met with this approval.
Well, let's talk about that, the engagement process. I mean, I think there was a lot of pushback in regards to citizen engagement. You note that there were differences across the different states. And as we think about the Great Lakes, I mean, in Michigan, we hold up our hand to define our state. We're literally surrounded by the Great Lakes. Does it necessitate a more robust engagement of the citizenry when we're looking at these kind of diversions?
Well, I absolutely think so. People really care about our Great Lakes. And they really care about water leaving the Great Lakes. And so the public outcry on this was huge. Thousands of people submitted comments. However, there was only one public hearing in the city of Waukesha that was supposed to be representative of all the Great Lakes people in the basin, which was a hardship for folks to come from New York or Minnesota. I mean, what happens in Waukesha doesn't stay in Waukesha, and the Great Lakes are huge, but any impact of them impacts all the Great Lakes. So more public engagement is definitely needed to help improve this process.
So as our time together comes to an end, with the Waukesha approval, what's on the horizon? How many other communities are waiting in the wings for, you know, similar approval of a diversion? And what does this say about our need for more comprehensive and, frankly, more unified land use planning? Because part of this is actually about where our communities are located in the basin or outside the basin.
That's right. I think you can look to any community that straddles the Great Lakes Basin, and they would be technically eligible to apply for a diversion, the exemption to the ban on diversions. However, what this process showed was that it's very difficult to make the case to get a diversion. The city of Waukesha ended up having a public water supply problem. They had naturally occurring radium. They were originally applying for more areas that were not in need of water, so the governors narrowed that down, so that reduced that urban sprawl argument. It also nailed down the amount of water, so there was not an exaggerated excessive amount of water. So a lot of the things that were put as a condition on this application really sets the path for a community in the future has to have a water quality problem and has to meet this standard. And if not, they don't meet that standard, then they would not get approved for a diversion of water.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Mark. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That is Mark Smith, Policy Director for the Great Lakes Regional Center of the National Wildlife Federation.
Lisa Wozniak is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment is a monthly feature and heard, as you might expect, on the first Friday of each month. For more information on today's feature and to visit our archive, go to our webpage at WEMU.org.